Brigadier Taylor, Reel 3.
Brigade plan. The main objective was point 355, which looked like the Rock of Gibraltar. And this was the task of the King's Own Scottish Borders. And there were to be two enveloping attacks to outflank this great hill. On the left, the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, supported by a squadron of the 8th Hussars under Major de Clermont, a squadron of Royal Engineers to clear the road of mines, and their objectives were 208, 2110, and finally 227. This would complete the envelopment or the outflanking of 355 on the left. And on the right, the 3rd Royal Australians under Colonel Hassett, a great soldier, their objectives were 199, and they were supported by half a squadron of the 8th Hussars. The bulk of the artillery to start with was to support the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, and then the King's Own Shropshire, the KSB, in turn. I got that right. Bulk of the artillery to support the KSLI, and then to support the King's Own Scottish Borderers in turn. The fire plan, as I've mentioned before, had at its disposal 120 guns and heavy mortars. Concentrations of fire, a milk round to start with, from 0480 to 0545, and then concentrations from 0545, as mentioned, supporting each battalion in turn. And the timings of each battalion were varied in the attack. The KSLI were to assault at 0545 and the King's Own Scottish Borders at 0708. Smoke was to be laid to obscure the top of 355 by the 4.2 mortars. Two companies, the Royal Australians, and half a squadron of tanks of the 8th Hussars were to remain in reserve. And the next phase would be that the Royal Northampton Fusiliers, placed under my command, was to attack and do a right hook through the 3rd Royal Australians, who there at that time we'd hoped to seize 317. This would complete the envelopment of the Great Hill 355. The battalion plans, the King's Shropshire Light Infantry, at night were to move one company forward to take 208, which was an outpost position. The 3rd Royal Australians at night were to take, at 3 o'clock in the morning, were to take 199. This was very important, because holding this position we could support the attack from the right on of the King's Own Scottish Borders on 355 with tank fire and machine guns. Now, before the attack, I had some problems. We had about 10 days' notice, which gave us the time to carry out patrolling, study of the enemy positions. But the two lieutenant colonels, now dead, I'm sorry to say, they were very worried, particularly, I think, MacDonald, who had to attack 355, because he was not given tanks in direct support. And the success of his attack would depend greatly on the two battalions attacking on his flanks, achieving their objectives, or nearly achieving their objectives, which could bring pressure on 355 from the flanks. So this was the problem. I had to argue with them. I pointed out we had plenty of artillery support for that type of war. We had air support, and we had magnificently trained and experienced troops. I don't suppose at that time there was a better brigade in the British Army. The Australian commander, Hassett, was by no means pessimistic. And I held an O group, a coordinating conference, and I got the battalion commanders to give out their plans before a considerable audience. Of course, they were committed in this way. I should have mentioned the plan. We decided to try and surprise the enemy by infiltrating forward six companies. Two companies of the Australians who were going for 199, and the four companies of the King's Own Scottish Borders. So, I tried a method that I'd used in Holland, and it was successful. We infiltrated men forward of our front line, the FDLs, towards the enemy, which cut down the actual assaulting distance considerably. And all that day they filtered forward, moving about 100 yards from each other. I was depending on the Chinese sentries, not realizing what was happening. And it was successful. And they were able to lay up that night. They all had blankets. And when dawn came, they were fresh and fit for the battle, which is of very great importance, to get men to the starting point fresh and fit. And a feature of the plan was to put the weight of the artillery behind each attacking battalion in turn, the full weight, the concentration of the artillery fire. KSLI attacked on time and ceased 2:08 and were ready to move forward. The CO got on the phone on the blower to me and said the tanks hadn't arrived and they had been held up by the mines and the boggy nature of the ground. And I had to make the decision, and I told him he must get on without them, which he did. The leading company of the K Shropshire Light Infantry were moving forward at this time. And as mentioned, they stormed this little feature 208, a deadly rush, and it was over.
Ready?
We now come to the attack of the KSB. After a bitter struggle, they overcame a feature called Long. When they were attacking on the two company front, Little on the left, Major Little on the left, and Harrison on the right. But there was a lack of moppers up behind them, and the story is told that out of a deep entrenchment or dugout, a couple of Chinese were dragging a machine gun with wheels. It must have been very ancient vintage. But still, it could have done a lot of damage, but the jocks soon sorted that out. Then the attack was held up. The battle had been going on for several hours. And I came forward to see what could be done. And I moved forward and I found the CO in a captured slit trench, and he said the attack was being held up. However, he agreed to go forward again, and we made it a plan with the artillery, and at 15:30 hours the leading companies attacked again and took a feature called Kidney, and they then went firm for the night. That meant, of course, we were behind schedule, and that would affect the Canadians on the left. So I telephoned, spoke to the Castles, the divisional commander, and got permission to have the artillery supporting us to 1,100 hours. Let's follow now what's happening on the Australian front. Key there was 0.199, and the leading company assaulted at night and took it. It was only held by a very small number of the enemy, but it was in our hands, and we were able to use this as a pivot. And then the attack developed on a two company front along the long ridge.
Yes.
The Australians got onto the end of it. A company left and B company right. And the first feature was 180 held by two platoons of the enemy. B Company assaulted this and took it. A Company attack at 190 was held up for a time. But the support of our artillery and tanks eventually removed this obstacle, and they were able to help the B Company fighting its way forward onto 160. And then, eventually, B Company, supported by D Company, and the fire of A Company, and the tanks and artillery, attacked the main feature, 317, and captured it. This was, of course, a brilliant operation. Under the command of Colonel Hassett, and wonderful cooperation from the squadron, the half squadron of the 8th Hussars, and the artillery. It was a great example of the cooperation of all arms. Meanwhile, the KSLI had worked their way forward and were nearing 0.227 on the northern slopes of 355. So this was a position before dawn. The King's Own Scottish Boers attacked 355 shortly after dawn and captured it and shot up a lot of the enemy fleeing down the back slopes of the hill. Then the plan was for the Northumberland Fusiliers to go forward and capture 0.217.
217?
217. That's it. They attacked on a two-company front, and there was very fierce fighting, and they were held up. And this was vision by nightfall. But he still had two companies, the CO, who hadn't been committed. And I held a conference with him that night. And the plan was, and agreed the plan was, to push these two companies through the Australian position, thereby exploiting success, through 0.317, and then to do a hook onto 0.217. And this was all arranged. About 3 or 4 in the morning, the CO rang me up. He said he couldn't do it. It was too big a climb for his men. I think he'd forgotten the saying, sweat saves blood. And he wanted to continue on the old axis, with a slight alteration, with perhaps more firepower. I was very disturbed at this. and had even arranged with the Australians to secure a good start point near 317 for him. But he had his way, and the attack went in and failed with quite heavy losses. And the losses up to that time had been very few. But still, we held most of the ground, and I decided that I would no longer commit any troops to attacking 217, but bring it under heavy artillery fire and air strikes. And in due course, this came about. The enemy obviously had been having suffered heavy casualties and were exhausted, and they withdrew. And our patrols found this out, Northumberland Fusiliers patrols and the Australian patrols found this out, and the Northumberland Fusiliers were moved forward and occupied 217. Then it was the business of holding on. The enemy began to counterattack, particularly on the Australian front. And it was a question of getting supplies up to them. And we stripped the Korean porters from the left flank, from the KSLI, and moved them, a lot of them, up to bring up ammunition to the Australians. And with this they did. It was just as well. For that night, in my command headquarters, the signal officer came to me. He said, "There's some radio messages coming from the Australians." But there was a great deal of atmospherics, and we couldn't hear much about it. We couldn't make out what it was. But my mind went back to a similar situation in fighting in Holland in 1944. And I requested the artillery to bring down an uncle target, that is a concentration of the whole of the divisional artillery. They were very doubtful about this and a bit obstructive, but I insisted. And it was carried out. And next morning, there were 120 dead Chinese counted in the in front of point 317. And that was the end of the battle. We took about 1,000 prisoners. Our casualties were fairly low, except for the Northumberland Fusiliers.
What was the name of this operation?
Operation Commander. And
yes,
it was Operation Commander, and was the only set piece operation carried out by the British Army of any sort of considerable scale since the end of the Second World War, 1945, except for the attack on Port Stanley in the Korean War, in the Falklands War.
Yes.
After the battle, I issued the following order of the day, addressed to all ranks of the 28th British Commonwealth Brigade and attached troops. I wish to congratulate all ranks on their splendid achievements in the Battle of Khao Sang and Mary Sang, Operation Commander. You have badly mauled the 191 Chinese division and stormed and taken defensive positions of very great natural and artificial strength and beaten off counterattacks with great resolution. You have gained proof of your superiority over an enemy horde with considerable determination and some skill. The brigade achieved a good measure of surprise in its skillful deployment for battle under the very noses of the enemy, and by bold maneuver, but success above all came from the fine combination of all arms which enabled the infantry to close with the enemy, which they did with the greatest skill and dash. and in other cases they were able to get to grips by bold use of the early morning mists. None of the above could have achieved without a high standard of training, which we must always maintain by training when we can on the job. I would especially like to thank those officers and other ranks who laboured long and hard to maintain the flow of ammunition supplies to the fighting companies and to rescue the wounded. Last but not least, I would like to thank the Brigade Battle School for the training of 250 NCOs, whose good standard of training enabled fine officer leadership to exert its maximum effort. This meant that we won decisively all the little actions without undue loss, which finally added up to the victory. Thank you all. From now on, the motto of the brigade will be Organized Speed. Signed, George Taylor, Commander 28th Commonwealth Brigade, 9th of October, 1951.
Now, you had many national servicemen under you. Could you make some comments about how they performed?
They were about 50%. I can only say, what the Americans talked about the brigade. They said we were the professionals. No, they were splendid chaps when they'd been trained.
Was it at all difficult to motivate the men in Korea?
Not at all. Not any more difficult than it was in World War II.
Did you have to do anything to explain to the men why they were there?
Yes, from time to time, yes. I think if there was any difficulty, it was with some of the COs of the battalions.
In what way?
Well, they said, if you're in a battalion, you are the sort of father figure. They're your men, they're your officers. And they know, as we all know, to carry out a successful attack will cost between 70 to 40 casualties. And why should they attack this particular ridge and that ridge and so on, therefore? There's a sort of John Bunyan said, "Whoso beset himself round with dismal stories, do but themselves confound." And I think this was this is one of the difficulties one had to overcome, but not on the company commander level or platoon commander. It was the commanding officers. In some cases, not all. Certainly wasn't the case in the Australian. Hassett was a magnificent man. And so was the commander of the 22nd Royal Canadians.